Save big money on your next project with help from Menards. Move water where you need it quickly with a Barracuda sump pump. Sump pumps keep your basement dry when big storms hit unexpectedly. Get a half horsepower cast iron Barracuda sump pump on sale now through May 5th. Hurry into Menards. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hello, three questioners. I am here today with a dear sweetheart in my life, Mr. Dion Cole,
yes.
An old friend,
yes.
An old comrade,
yes.
road companion. How you doing?
I'm good, bro. How you doing?
I'm doing well,
good.
Yeah.
That's good. Thanks for having me.
No problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, you and I got to know each other on the tour when we, between the Tonight Show and...
Yes.
And the TBS show.
Yeah.
You came and did warm up for us.
Yes, sure did.
We got to travel together.
We got to rock, man.
Yeah.
We hit the road for how long is that? Like about.
It was like 3 months.
It felt longer.
Two or three months, but you know.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. It made me realize like I can't do the road.
Uh-huh.
You know, like waking up, waking up in a hotel room in the dark and being like, where's the fucking bathroom? I don't remember where the bathroom, like, that's a closet, you know?
I used to be so smashed on that road. Because the show would go, and then towards the end of the show, I would do like 10 minutes of stand-up.
Yeah, yeah.
The end of it.
Yeah.
And then... we'll close the show out and it'll be done.
Yeah.
Every time, right after I was done, I had a drink in my hand.
Yeah, see, that's what I felt too. Like, if I had to be on the road much, I'd be 350 pounds and a fucking alcoholic. So it'd be so bad. Because that's also, too, life on the road. You can't eat healthy.
No, you can't.
It's really hard.
You can't.
Everything that you can get that's quick and easy is garbage.
The only way that I diet is, like, especially when it comes to doing comedy shows, I will stay in the hotel room until the show.
Yeah.
And then I'll eat at the show.
Right.
I wouldn't eat the rest of the day.
Oh, wow.
I would just stay in my room starve, man.
Really?
Until I get to the show. But then the problem is when I got to the show, I ate the whole left side of the menu.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't eat all day long.
Right, right.
So it kind of, messes up with the diet that I was trying to be.
Right, right. You pioneered intermittent fasting.
Yeah, there it is. You know? Yeah, that's.
And that, you know,
I was the first.
It does kind of make sense though. Like you think about, you know, probably the way that a lot of primitive humans mm-hmm. ate was, oh, we killed a deer, and then they get really full, and they didn't eat for 2 days. I mean, maybe some roots and berries in between.
Right.
You know, so.
That's what's up, man.
Well, now, you like me, you're from the Chicago area, but you're from Chicago specifically.
Yes.
You were born in Chicago?
Yeah, born and raised, man.
Yeah.
Still there. You go back there?
I haven't been back in a while. My daughter and I were supposed to go back in a few weeks, but I don't know if we're going to, you know.
Oh, shit, man.
I don't know when this is going to air, but we're in the midst of the coronavirus. And that just now it seems like, because I was kind of like, can we still do that? And every day it just seems more and more irresponsible get into a plane, you know.
I have a friend who told me that they had a friend that flew. And they said that it was like Like, it was like 15 people on the plane, and the plane was super clean.
Yeah.
Like 15 people on
Yeah, they're apparently going in and wiping down everything. It does seem kind of like, in some way, like it is the time to go do, like, go get on a plane
or go
to Disneyland.
They said it's wide open.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Wide open.
I've seen pictures, yeah.
Yeah.
But I still don't know. I just feel like, you know.
I'm nervous, too. Like, a lot of my shows, they have been postponed.
Really?
Yeah, they've been postponed. Because
so you're in town for a while?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because my first stop was Seattle.
Oh, wow.
My first stop was Seattle. And they people still, like, sending me, like, DMs and stuff. They were sitting up like, you still coming? I'm like, you watching the news, No, I'm not coming out there.
No,
not right now.
You come here. You know what? But in fact, don't come here. If you come here, wear a mask.
Yeah, right. I might go live and do some jokes, but I'm not coming there.
So tell me, what kind of kid were you when you were? Because, you know, this show is kind of, sort of start at the beginning and go through everything. What kind of kid were you?
Man,
you a funny kid?
I had a big imagination.
Yeah.
That's what I had because I grew up as the only child. So I had like a
Really? You don't have any siblings at all?
I do. I found out later I had a sister.
Oh, okay.
And then I had like a play sister coming up, somebody that just kind of grew up with me. But biologically, no. I have one that was like a half sister, but I met her when I was like in my 30s.
Oh, so yeah.
Yeah, so, like, now it's just, like, I mean, me growing up, I grew up as an only child. So, yeah, it was just me, television, toys. Those were, like, that was everything.
That was your world,
That was everything. Not even going outside, really. Like, I went outside and played and had a good time. But my world in my room, in my bedroom, that was everything.
Yeah. And TV, too. Yeah, I was the same way. Like,
yeah.
I had an older brother that would always be like, come on, let's go outside and throw a ball. And I'd be like, why the fuck would I do that? You know,
what
Partridge Family's
right?
on.
Right.
You know, Johnny Sacco and his magic robot or whatever the fuck was on Channel 44.
Right, that's how I was, man. I used to be like, nah, I'm just gonna stay in and shit, man. Nah, I'd rather stay in.
Yeah.
Play with toys and shit. Yeah.
So at school, were you like a well-behaved kid, or were you a smart ass?
I was like basically a good B student.
Yeah.
B, C student, just going with the flow, not bothering nobody. Not super excellent, not dumb shit.
Yeah.
Just
right.
Basic middle guy.
Yeah.
Just stayed out everybody's way. You know, just real fucking chill, man.
Yeah.
I never was, because I was always an introvert in a sense, because I would rather go watch TV and chill.
Like,
I never really wanted to be like that guy or nothing like that, you know. But I always had a certain way of thinking and didn't think nobody thought like I did. So I really stayed to myself.
Were your folks aware of that? Like, did they try and change you in any way?
No, because it was just me and my mom's, man. Uh-huh. My mom was always trying to find a job.
Oh, I see.
Always trying to work. She always was like, man, I gotta get a job. I gotta take care of me and you. And she just always was at work. When she did get a job, it'd be weird hours. And she just worked really, you know, less than par jobs, you know, like working at like chicken restaurants and currency exchange. And even though currency exchange was a good job that she held us down with overtime, but everything else was just like she was getting what she can get.
Yeah, you know? Temporary stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you have that imagination before she was kind of out?
Yeah,
or
Well, that's
good.
Yeah,
I mean, you know.
Yeah, because it was, like I said, it was just me and like,
because you got your own built-in babysitter then.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And so, like, when she did, even when she had a decent jobs, she would be at work a lot. So it would just be me, you know.
Yeah.
Even when people babysat me, I really didn't spend too much time with them because I just wanted to be in my room with my fucking Evel Knievel and shit.
Yeah.
You know, Spider-Man and, you know, that kind of shit. Hot Wheel cars and but they were like in real situations, like that was the way. Like I wouldn't play like having them fly and shit. They would be like, you know, in meetings and you know, just.
Yep. The bus broke down. Yeah, yeah. Someone needs to find a spare tire.
Relationship problems. It was like I played.
Why won't you open up to me, Spider-Man? You're so closed off
Spider-Man,
emotionally.
What's wrong? Like, yeah, it used to be wild, man. Yeah, so yeah, that's the kind of guy I was, man.
I remember, this is when I was like 5, 6. I had like an elaborate fantasy relationship with Speed Racer.
From the cartoon. Yeah.
And it was always like, there's been a crash. Speed, and I'm laying in bed thinking like, there's been a crash. Someone needs to save Speed. I've got to get over there on my helicopter. Not that I was Trixie, because Trixie drove the helicopter.
Right.
I want to be Trixie. Maybe that's been my secret all along. I just want to be Trixie.
Speed Racer was another one, man. I used to love Speed Racer, man.
And it's so weird. Man, all those Japanese cartoons, like, because at the time you didn't realize it was Japanese. You're just like, this shit is fucking weird.
Goldar, remember? Uh-huh. Like, this used to be that. Johnny Socket, I think.
Johnny Socko. And the giant robot. Yeah. Ultraman. Ultraman was on there too. All that shit is like, oh wow. I love Japanese the Gamera movies as a kid that were really cool.
Yeah, man.
So when do you start being funny at school? I mean, is it at school that you start being funny? Does your mom think you're funny? Does she encourage it?
Now she does, but she still don't. My mother's like hilarious. My mother was always vocal, funny. She was always the center of attention. You know, she was like that kind of lady, but not me. I never was like that person.
You think she was like taking up all the oxygen, sort of?
I just used to just watch her. I used to just be like, I used to love watching her. She used to do this thing when I was a kid where if a commercial came on and somebody would be like, hello, are you tired of reading at night? She'd be like, I am. And then she'd be like, are you tired of this? She'd be like, I actually am.
Yeah.
I don't know why that used to crack my shit up, man. She used to do that shit all the time. She would talk back to the commercials.
That's
and
a good bit.
Oh, it used to be so funny, man. I used to just laugh. She was just really funny like that. And so me, I wasn't. I was more like just to myself and having thoughts to myself.
Yeah.
Just always like kind of like just not wanting to disappoint.
Yeah.
So didn't know if this was wrong to say or not. But then when I became a teenager, I became more vocal.
Yeah.
But still not in a boisterous way. Like I wasn't just, hey.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you had to know me in order to hear me.
Uh-huh.
So like if you was my friend, like something might happen and everybody would be busting up laughing and shit. And my friend would be laughing. Like if somebody tripped and fell, everybody laugh and shit. And I would like lean to my friend and be like, I wonder why did they fall? You know, I'd be like, they didn't see that big ass chair right there. Like, I saw it. Didn't you see it? You saw it too, right? So if we walked around the chair, why wouldn't he walk around? Like, and I would just always go into depth about shit. And my friend used to be like, boy, you crazy as hell. Boy, you crazy as hell. So it's like when I got older, I started letting these thoughts go.
Yeah.
And I just like anything that happened, I'd be like, I wonder why she cooked that like that. Why did she burn it? What was on her mind that you didn't keep your mind on these motherfucking eggs when they was cooking and now they ruined because you was thinking about something. I wonder what you was thinking. Like, I just always do that. So as I got older, one day my friend was just like, this is when I was out of high school and everything. My friend was just like, man, you should do comedy. And I was like, nah, I ain't doing no fucking comedy. I was like, that shit is for goofies. And he'd be like, nah, there's some great people who did comedy. And I was like, nah, I ain't doing no comedy. And he was like, dude, if you go on stage, I'll give you $50.
Oh, wow.
And I said, $50. He was like, yeah. I said, when? He was like, tomorrow, let's go down to comedy club. I said, all right. We went down there, and I couldn't get on stage. Then we went the following week, and I couldn't get on stage. And then a week after that, I got on, and I knew at that moment in my life, I knew what I was here to do.
Oh,
I
really?
I just instantly was like, oh, this is why I'm here.
And what was your hunch before then, what you were here to do? Did you have one?
I have no idea. Really? I know my mother used to be on me and be like, when you going to get a job? you know, your uncle, he's working at the Transit Authority, the CTA. You can go get a job driving buses or riding a train or driving a train.
Yeah,
or
which isn't
like
a bad job.
It's a great job.
Yeah, yeah.
Benefits, all that.
Yeah.
So I was like, she was like, yeah, we're going to try to get you in. I was like, all right, fine, cool. So that's what I was trying to get into. But while I was selling coats at this leather maker,
you've told me about Berman's.
It was leather makers.
Oh, it was leather makers.
I was selling leather coats, and so I was waiting on the transit job to come, and then that's when my friend was like, "Man, you should do stand up," and I was like, "Eh,
yeah."
And then when I did it, I was like, "Oh, okay,
yeah."
Could not sleep.
Yeah.
Couldn't I sleep? None of that. Just every day I would wake up and just be like, I want to go do that again.
Do that again.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to come back to this, but I do want, to talk about the side business? Was that
the
leather makers?
Yeah, let's do it.
Because that's fucking hilarious to me. And it's like, there's such a logic to it.
Yeah.
And at the leather makers, you guys also sold another product. Which was
marijuana.
It was weed.
We sold weed.
And I love it's because, the place already smells like leather.
Yes.
So you throw in some weed there, nobody's going to really notice that much.
People do not realize that if you have a certain amount of leather in a store or in a warehouse or in a room, the smell of leather will outdo any other smell.
Yeah.
Any other smell. We used to literally sit at the register of this fucking store smoking weed, and it was glass windows. So you could see anybody.
Was it in a mall or just out in the outside?
It was like, don't you know how you have like a grocery store mall,
right? Oh, strip
right?
mall, yeah.
But there would be like a section, like you might see like a eyeglass place.
Yeah.
Like not connected to the mall, but in the parking
sure,
lot of the
sure.
mall. So it was kind of like that.
I gotcha.
It was like a little section off from the mall area,
yeah,
and you could see cars pull up. So we would sit at the register and smoke weed. A car pull up, we'll put the joint out, and then we'll like fan the smoke, and then we'll spray some spray, and then people come in.
Nobody ever noticed.
They will walk right from their car right in and won't smell nothing.
Wow.
And nothing at all. And we would sit there high as shit.
Would the manager know?
Or the manager used to smoke with us.
Oh, he was.
She's the one who told us about it.
Yeah, by the way, part of your orientation.
Because we used to get off work. As soon as we closed the stores, she would light a joint every night.
Wow.
And she'd do it right there. So then it got to the point where, shit, we were doing it during the day. Like,
yeah.
If it was slow, we would just smoke right there in the store.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was crazy.
See,
yeah.
Now, who wants to work? Who wants to drive a fucking bus?
Yeah.
when you got that sweet life.
You can work in a leather store.
Yeah, yeah.
Goddammit.
And discounts on the leather jackets.
Yeah, I have so many leather coats.
I bet. I was probably 14 or 15, and I bought a black leather motorcycle jacket, but not like the, you know, not like the Fonzie one.
Yeah.
The one that was kind of like more like a... you know, motocross kind of jacket.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I just, like, I see pictures of myself, and it's like fucking putting a switchblade in a bowl of pudding. It's just like, and I thought, like, yeah, I look all right. I look fucking ridiculous. Just fucking ridiculous.
A switchblade in a bowl.
Oh, it was, but yeah.
All the pudding, that's funny as shit.
Yeah,
man.
I still, but I, yeah, I don't even, I like, I can't wear leather now. I just, I don't know. I feel like a fucking dork. I just feel like I can't pull this shit up. I don't know. I feel like, like if I put on a leather coat now, I just feel like I look like, a fucking cop.
No.
Trying to,
What's
you know.
What's wrong with a nice aviator-type leather, man?
You can
rock that shit.
All right, I'll try, I guess. And also, it's too fucking hot.
Yeah, it's too
hot in LA.
But it's been chilly lately at
night.
That's true. Get you a nice, thin aviator,
all
man.
Right,
You'll look nice today,
I'll try. I'll try. If anything we get from this, me to come back to leather coats.
Every picture you're frowning in it. Dion made me do it.
Dion made me do this. I look like Fat Fonzie.
Hahaha. Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of body plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all 4.5-inch Bonnie plants are on sale through May 5th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
If there's anything better than getting a few of your favorite things from McDonald's, it's getting a few of your favorite things from McDonald's for less in the McDonald's app. Delicious. Order in the McDonald's app today.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Right now, only in the app. Enjoy a breakfast sandwich for just $1, like a sausage McMuffin with egg. Offer valid one time per day from 4/29 to 5/12/24 at participating McDonald's. Must opt into rewards.
Can't you tell my love's a growing?
When you did that first stand-up, did you work on material? Like, kind of, did you really, like, think and really get stuff together, or did you just kind of wing it?
No. I sat back and I watched these comedians, and I kept thinking to myself, I could do this.
Yeah.
I could do this. And so I started thinking about stories that I've told other people that
right.
had them laughing. And then I would ask my friends, what story have I told you that made you laugh? And they was like, yo, the one about the projects, the one when you was dating no girl, you had to walk up to the project door, and then you was wondering who's going to walk you back to your car. Like, that's hilarious. And
yeah,
I was oh, yeah, okay, cool. So then I wrote that down. And then we started talking about other stuff. And it was this commercial they used to play in Chicago. I think you maybe seen it. It was called Eagle Man. It was about an insurance
eagle
commercial.
Oh, all right. Yeah, yeah, no.
Be like this eagle landed on this car and he had an egg and it opened it up.
I
and
don't
it was
remember
low
that.
Rates and shit.
I don't remember that.
Dude, that shit used to play every day in Chicago. It was up there with the Empire commercials.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like that. So I talked about how dumb as fuck that was. And then I saw a Sunny Delight commercial. And it was about how these kids are just running in this white guy's house, raiding his refrigerator and shit. And I just thought how that wouldn't happen in a black home. Wrote that shit down and went up there and murdered.
Yeah, yeah.
Murdered. And
oh,
was
that's
like,
great.
Yo, okay.
This oh, my God. Up. And for that to have the first time. That's...
But never worked it out. Never, like.
Stood in front of the mirror.
None of that shit.
Yeah.
I just wrote down. And I didn't even write the whole thing out. I just wrote down. Sunday Delight commercial, Eagle Man commercial.
Yeah, yeah.
Taking old girl to the project.
Yeah.
And I just wrote these beats, and I just wrote them down on paper, and I remembered them, and I went on stage, and I did that shit, and motherfuckers just busting up.
That's
and
great.
Just
well, because like, your wow. rehearsal was telling it to people in real life.
Yeah.
You're just
told,
being a funny person in real life.
I
yeah.
told so many people. But the commercials, I went and seen this shit. I started paying attention to shit.
Right.
Before I went on stage, I started like looking at shit and going, oh, this commercial's stupid. I should talk about it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, this is stupid. I should talk about it. So it started going like that on top of the stories that I had and this shit. I had 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, it's good too because, you know, I think, I mean, it's probably good that you hadn't soaked yourself in the stand-up world mm-hmm. and absorbed like other people's bad habits. Mm-hmm. You basically were coming in. As you,
yeah.
as the original you, mm-hmm. you know, and not kind of sticking to some kind of format or what was expected of you.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, it's a fantastic instinct to have, you know.
Yeah, no, thanks, man.
Yeah.
I watched these guys and was just like, I can do that shit. You know, I just kept thinking I can do it, I can do it. But when I did it, it was lights out, man.
Yeah.
I couldn't eat, think, sleep, nothing but.
How long was it till you went back?
I went back like maybe a week later.
Yeah. What club was it?
It was called All Jokes Aside on 9th and Wabash.
Okay.
9th and Wabash, called All Jokes Aside.
So in the South Loop then?
Yeah, South Loop. And then I started like, and then this comedian told me, I was doing so well that I ended up getting on this TV show 4 months later called Comic Justice that was on Comedy Central. Like 4 months, like this.
Whoa.
This how easy.
What year is this?
This is like 93, 94.
Wow.
Like, it was so easy. The 5 minutes that I was doing was killing so hard that I got into, like, this competition thing and got to be on this show 4 months later. And then 8 months after that, I was on HBO's Def Comedy Jam. So within 12 months, I was on, like, one of the biggest platforms in comedy, which is Def Comedy Jam.
Yeah.
But what make you is what break you. So as I did get on this show, I only had like 10 minutes of material. I did 7 of the minutes on Def Jam. I only had 3 left. So then they were like, yo, we want you to go on tour with us. I said, great. I went on tour with Def Jam. I was supposed to do 20 minutes. I did the set that I did on TV that people saw already, that they was kind of like, okay, motherfucker, what else you got?
Yeah, we saw that.
And I had nothing else. So I got booed one night. Other night, nobody laughed and did nothing. Another night, it was the same. And then they told me I can go home.
Oh,
sent me a ticket. Was like, yo, thanks anyway. Appreciate you. Sent me home. And I was just crushed.
Yeah.
Because I was so embarrassed to go home. I wouldn't even tell people I was at home. I wouldn't even go to my normal spots where I go eat or go shoot pool because everybody knew I was on tour. And I was just so embarrassed that I just stayed in the house and I just kept thinking to myself, I got to write.
Yeah.
I was like, I got to write. And I just kept thinking that, like, I got to write. I got to write. And then I just started writing and writing. Then I started writing scripts and sketches and writing jokes and jokes and just kept writing and writing and writing, not even knowing why I'm writing. I was just... like, I'll think of a movie scene and write it. Like, just, I would just write the movie scene down.
Yeah.
Like, that was it. I'll write the dialogue for that. And I was just writing, just. And then I talked to some other friends, and we started forming this group called Second City. And then we stopped performing, and then we went down. I mean, not Second City, Forgotten City.
Uh-huh.
And then we went
I was going to say, you know, there is a Second City.
Yeah, I know, right? But we went down to Second City, introduced ourselves, and they gave us a night.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right there.
Oh, that's awesome.
Clark. And so we used to perform right on top of Tina and Frank's wedding.
They would
be there on Friday night. And Friday night, we would be on top of them.
In the upstairs space?
In the upstairs space,
yeah. Yes.
And we would perform there. And we did it for like a year. Every Friday, we had these sketches we would do, and we would just knock it out. Place would be packed. The whole city used to come see us every time.
Wow.
And then we left, came to L.A. and had a showcase with Puffy and Brillstein and Gray. And we did this whole big showcase. They loved us. Our manager at the time was on some old cocaine shit.
Uh-huh.
Took our money.
It'll happen.
Took our money.
Oh.
Fucked the deal up. And we all went back home.
Oh, fuck.
And I just was like, yo, anyway. And I just kept writing. Now I started writing for this other comedian named Ricky Smiley. He started hosting this show called Comic View.
Uh-huh.
I wrote for him. And I wrote these prank phone call CDs that he wrote. And then I went back home. And I was just at home chilling. And
then
that was it. And then I went and did festival. And did the Aspen Festival.
Uh-huh. What year was that?
This was like 96. No, this was like, I think this was like early 2000s.
Okay.
I think it was early 2000s. I did a festival, and that's when I met J.P. Buck.
Uh-huh.
J.P. Buck, who works at Conan.
Works here, yeah.
He saw me perform and was like, he didn't even really say nothing to him. He just said, great job, but that was it. And then later on, when Conan came to, when you all came to L.A.,
yeah,
J.P. began working for you all, remembered me from the Aspen Festival, and said, hey, would you like to come do a spot on the Tonight Show? And I was like, yeah.
Maybe.
Let me go think about it. Okay, I thought about it, yes. And man, lights out.
Yeah.
I was just like that, lights out. Like, man.
Well, you were so fucking funny, and I mean, and we, you know, got our hooks into you right away.
Man.
Yeah.
Didn't even, I don't even know if you even know the whole story about me with that shit, man.
I don't. Like, I don't. No, you just showed up. I was like, who's this black guy? Have you looked around?
Right.
It's all white here. What's going on?
And I told everybody, too. I said, it is white. It's snow.
I know. Well, it's honestly, it is. It's like, you know, I fucking wish it weren't. And the only way to have that, to change that, is to hire black people. And
but
we hired you. And then you went and got too famous for us. Fucking took off on us, you know.
No, dude, it was so bizarre. Like, when I first got there, I was ready to quit. Like, I stayed there for a while. I mean, like,
soon after your spot did you get a writing job?
Shit, it was 2 weeks later I heard from Conan.
Yo, really? Wow.
Saying, yo, want you to come write. But I had these comedy shows that I had just won that I was supposed to do, like with these schools.
Like a tour kind of thing. Yeah,
and I was like, I'm not losing that money to go over there. I was like, and do what? And they was like, write. And I was like, write what? Like, what do you want me to write? Like,
yeah.
That's fucking Conan. Like, I don't know what he want me to write. And they was like, just jokes. Like, he wants you to write jokes for him. And I just was like, that don't make sense to me. And I was like, but anyway, I'll go and see what's up. But I just, I writing for Conan was so huge that my mindset didn't fit what was going on. You get what I'm saying? It was like, I know he don't want me to write, right? So what do we want me to do? And they was like, write. And I'm like, nah.
Yeah, no, like, we meant write,
right? No, yeah, but I'm like, write what, though? Like, you wouldn't even know if I could write or not. I never submitted nothing. I never even told you that I wrote.
Yeah.
We never had this conversation. So I was like, what do you want me, like, I don't get it. And I just... And they kept going, we don't get it. My manager was like, we don't get it neither. We don't know. And to the point where they was like, are you like really?
Yeah.
And so when I showed up, I just like kept quiet and looked around and watched everybody and tried to fit in, and it just didn't work.
It didn't work.
It wasn't working. Yeah. I couldn't write like that. I wasn't even thinking the way that the other writers were thinking. Like, I couldn't even... My mind wasn't even there, and the things that I knew about, they didn't know about. And the things they were talking about, I had no idea what they were talking about, so I wasn't able to relate, and I got tired of being phony, because I was just being phony and acting like I knew, and I didn't, and it got exhausting, fake laughing.
Yeah.
And being like trying to fit in, and I told my manager, I was like, yo, I'm going to leave next week. And she like was like, do not leave, please stay. And I was like, nah, I was like, I'm good. I was like, it was cool and I appreciate the offer and I was love and I appreciate them and they're good people, but I don't want to be around those writers because they were just like, they're too advanced for me and I don't think like them. And so she was like, are you sure? She was like, just stay one more week. And I said, I'll stay another week, but then that's it. I was like, because I don't want to do that shit. And came to work. Chris, the IT guy.
Yeah, Chris Hayes.
Chris Hayes came to hook my computer up. And he was hooking my computer up. He was fixing it or doing something. And he was like, he closed my door and was like, dude, we so proud to have a black man behind those doors writing and representing us, do us well. And I said, no, nigga, don't put that shit on me. Like, don't put that pressure on me like that. He was like, no, I'm serious, man.
Yeah.
Like, really, man, show they ass, man. And I was like, no. In my mind, I'm going, I'm quitting. You know, I'm like, I ain't coming back to this shit. And I'm like, man, don't do that shit. So he was like, nah, for real, man, just, man, knock it out. He hooked my computer up and he left. And I was like, he gonna be disappointed. But then Erica Brown came and gave me my business
cards. These are, by the way,
these are people that work here.
These are African Americans that work
black,
here.
Yes, these are black people.
These are black people.
The only two black people that worked here. So Erica, who's...
That weren't in the band.
That wasn't in the band.
Yeah.
That wasn't in the band. So then Erica came up and gave me my business cards and said the same shit.
Yeah.
That she didn't even know that Chris said. She was like, man, being a black man over there is huge. Man, don't let us down. And I'm like, bitch, I'm about to quit. Like, no. And I sat with that shit like, fuck, man. I was like, it bothered me that they both said that shit to me. And that if I would have quit, I would have let them down.
Yeah.
And so but I still was going to quit. I still was like, fuck this. Like, I'll never see them again. Like, understand your black
people. Two more black forgotten dinner. Black people. Black you know people what? Swept yeah, under the rug I'm of history.
I'm sorry, but I'll never see you two motherfuckers ever again, neither. So fuck this. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And we sat up in the writer's room, and this is the moment that changed everything. We were writing for you.
Yeah.
We were writing a sketch for you for Oktoberfest. And they said, yeah, we got to come up this bit for Andy, Oktoberfest. And I sat there fed up, in a sense, because I was fed up not knowing shit that everybody was talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
I simply went, what the fuck is that? And they was like, well, I said, what's Oktoberfest? And they was like, it's a German drinking day. And I said, a German drinking day? And they was like, yeah. I said, Andy's German? And they was like, yeah. And I was like, And they was like, what? And I was like, I said, it's just odd that everybody got a fucking drinking day except for black people and shit. And they was like laughing, and they was like, what you mean? I was like, you got Cinco de Mayo, St. Patty's Day. And I said, now you got Oktoberfest.
Yeah.
I was like, black people ain't got a fucking drinking day? And everybody was laughing. And then Sweeney was like, shit, write that up.
Yeah, that's the bit.
That was the bit.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
He was like, let's write that up. And I was like, okay, and do what? And they was like, I'll show you how to write it. Cause I didn't even know how to fucking write it. He was like, yeah, I'm gonna show you how to write it. And we'll send it to Conan. It's like, okay, cool. So we sent it to Conan for him to do it, to talk about it.
Yeah.
And when Conan read the shit, Conan was like, you do it. I don't want to do that. You do it. And I was like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, what the fuck? He's going to stand there? He's going to stand there practically translucent and wonder why there's not a black drinking day?
I just thought it was some observational shit that he could have took and ran with it. But then I also was like, well, shit, why the fuck y'all asked me to write this shit for him? Because that's what it was for.
Right.
It was like, write it up. Like, write it up for him to talk about. And so Sweeney was showing me it wasn't for me to do. It was for him to talk about, to bring the obvious, like maybe do a sketch on having black drinking day or some shit. So then, shit, when he was like, you come out and do it, I was like, still like, huh? And after that, I came out and did that shit. It was lights out.
Yeah.
But I always tell people, I always be like, it was a sketch we was writing for Andy.
Oh, good.
That fucking turned the pages.
That's great.
Everything.
I'm happy. Yeah. No, I'm happy that, I mean, you know, just because, and I mean, I'm a whole lot of different kinds of white, but German just happens to be my last name.
Yeah, Richter, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I can tell you, you know, the idea of, and it is, this is such a white place,
mm-hmm.
and comedy can be such a white kind of, well, and also too, there's white culture and there's black culture.
Yeah.
There's white comedy and there's black comedy. Yeah. And it's kind of rare that they really mix in a way that they're on equal footing mm-hmm. within the same mm-hmm. kind of, you know, the same kind of format or the same kind of show. Like, mm-hmm. I'm kind of thinking like Key and Peele would be one that like was kind of like, wasn't so specifically black. And like Chappelle's show was, a lot of that was about about blackness, but it was just so fucking funny.
Yeah,
that it was exactly. just accessible to everybody. And also right. it was about bigger things,
right.
you know. So, yeah, I mean, in order to make to get color in here, it's yeah. like we need somebody. I wasn't in on hiring you,
mm-hmm.
but I can tell you just knowing Conan's mind and having being of a similar mind, you're funny.
Yeah,
come on in.
Yeah.
Come on in and let's figure it out.
And that's
what happened,
and
you know?
I felt that.
Yeah.
But I felt it from you all. I didn't feel it from everybody. But I wasn't around you all.
Yeah, yeah, I get it.
You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
It was like Conan was like, yo, or you or Conan or Sweeney would be like, you are hilarious.
Yeah.
And then leave me. You know what I mean? Then I didn't see y'all no more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then I was around other people that were like, no, you ain't funny like that.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, you got to chill. You got to sit back and let us chill. But what happened was, I mean, shit, it went from me not being able to write and compete like that to it became a day where they had to write. It was like people had to write for me.
You know? But that felt kind of fun.
It did feel,
motherfucker.
It got to became, instead of me trying to fit the format, it became the format that I was thinking of became a format that people had to recognize.
From denying your voice to writing for your voice
was
cool. Fucking sweet. That's awesome.
Man.
Yeah,
that's what happened.
And you broke out.
You broke out. And it was something that I always use for motivation. I tell people, you know, like I let people know, like that was a defining moment, man. But I remember I used to go to Conan. I used to talk to Conan and be like, man, I don't feel right. Like I don't feel right. Like you don't know what I'm dealing with. You know, he'll be like, man, like let me know if you got any problem. But anytime I went to him, everything got sweet.
Yeah.
And everything would be sweet for a minute. Then it'd be, you know. I mean, like, I remember this one writer, this motherfucker told me when I first got there, he came to me and was like, yeah, we glad to have you. And I was like, oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. He was like, yeah, make sure you keep your office tidy, okay? Keep it up. Because we don't want you bringing out a property of the other offices. And then everybody was laughing, and I was just like, what the fuck is going on?
In front of everybody?
Yeah, well, whoever was listening, whoever was there at the moment.
Was it meant to be like a, and I'm making air quotes, joke?
Yeah, it was meant to be a joke.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know you, motherfucker.
Right. Exactly.
I don't know you.
It's like
you,
6 months from now, you can maybe make
six
that joke.
6 months from now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we can do that.
Right, right.
But I don't know you.
Right, exactly.
This ain't no good introduction joke for me.
I think.
But I never
you bring
made a big deal.
I know. And I was, I was kind of aware of it at the time, but. You know, I mean, I'm not like I'm not in the writing process as much as I used to be, because I don't even know. Like when I think of a bit, I'm the same way. I got to fucking write it down on a piece of paper and have somebody else put it into the computer because I don't know where that program is. I don't know how it works. I'm just like, here, just put that in the computer and send it out. I was kind of aware of it. And I also was probably aware that there were going to be some members of the staff that were just that awkward whiteness that where it's like a black person, I'm going to be cool about it. And then they're just the exact opposite of cool.
Yeah.
And all they can focus on, they can't just like go like, oh, there's a black person.
Yeah.
Life goes on. Yeah. It's like, hey, black person, how is it being black? Yeah. How's your black day?
That kind of shit.
How's your black breakfast?
Yo,
you know,
it was like that.
Yeah.
It was like that, like on an every day where it'd be like, you know, like constant. And it'd be like, all right already. Like, okay, let's just focus on me trying to be great like you guys. Yeah. I want to write like you
right,
guys.
Right, right.
Like, I want to be great. Like I'm looking, I look up to you guys, man. You motherfuckers got Emmys and all kind of shit. Like, yeah, I want to be like one of y'all. Like, let's not, yeah. you know, make me feel fucked up about
yeah,
this.
Yeah, yeah,
but it was just so crazy how that shit turned.
Yeah.
It was like, ha, 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 ha. Oh, so do you like this, Dion? It was like, ha, ha, Dion, ha, ha, Dion. Then it just flipped to, hey, do you think you would say something like this, Dion?
Yeah,
or
yeah,
would,
yeah.
Would this be great or would yeah. this be? And I was like, yo, that's crazy how this shit changed like that or whatever. But it was just being persistent and being being true to who I was and not wavering, even though I tried to waver.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work. But what worked was just me being me and shit.
That's,
and I always wanted to.
It's a pretty good fucking lesson.
Yeah.
You know?
And I always wanted to bring all our shit together and bring it together. It's great when our worlds clash. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
It's great. It's great when I brought Conan to that soul food restaurant.
Yeah.
That shit was great to see that
right.
motherfucker in there eating ribs and pork chops.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
shit.
Yeah.
It was great putting you in that black commercial.
Uh-huh.
And at the end, you sitting there with two beautiful black babes. like, that shit's fun,
yeah,
man.
It was
beautiful. So
right. Well, because it points out kind of the absurdity of that, like, we live in the same fucking place and it's still two different worlds.
Yeah.
And it's silly.
It's silly. And it's great when we come together.
Yeah.
And so that's what I always wanted to incorporate as a writer here with the other writers. Like, man, let's not make this black white. Let's just make this a together thing and take both worlds and make them clash.
Right.
And that's going to be the funny. It ain't got to be a white thing or black thing.
And also, if we're writing a bit about, like, you know, there's a farmer in the audience.
Uh-huh.
Like, we're going to come up with farmer jokes. There's not going to be, it doesn't have to be black farmer jokes or white farmer jokes.
But let me put my spin on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't make me put the white spin on it. Let me put my spin on it.
Yeah,
let me
be
me doing this joke.
Yep.
You get what I'm saying? I always tell people, if you gave five comedians the script for Pet Detective, the movie Jim Carrey did, you will have five different pet detectives.
Absolutely. It's all the execution.
The
shittiest script.
Right.
And I mean, I've seen it from like things I've auditioned for where I'm like, man, this is a funny script. It comes out, it's just garbage.
Yeah.
And then a really kind of not so great script, like, hey, fuck, that's funny.
It's
funny, it comes out the other end funny.
Right.
Yeah.
As long as you can put your spin on it.
Yep.
And that's what was missing a lot of times, that they would be like, hey, do it this way. When I would be like, why do you have me here if you don't have me doing it the way that I would do it? You're missing out.
Yeah.
You're missing out on me not doing it the way that I do it, which is whatever. I'm a black man, so I'm going to do it the black fucking way. But you are missing out if you don't do that. And that's what I always tripped out about, you know, producers or casting directors or writers or whatever. When they get comedians or improv cats or whatever to do these scripts or be in this and that and the third, they get you and then make you do it this way instead of trusting you to do it the way that you do it. It's almost like, well, why do you got me here, motherfucker, if you don't trust me to bring my level of funny.
That's a never ending question in this fucking business, though. It's like, I mean, I've been hired to do TV shows, and they're like, I've lived through this where they're like, we want you. Mm-hmm. We want to hear your voice.
Mm-hmm.
And as you go through the process, it gets more and more. You know what? We'd actually have you rather be like everything else, if you don't mind.
Yes.
This whole thing, when we said we wanted you, we changed our minds.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And then in order to get it on, you have to convert to a way that they're used to, and now you're sitting on the shelf some goddamn place because you're like everybody else.
Or you're doing shitty work.
Or you're doing shitty fucking work.
Because it's always that, you know, I mean, there's plenty of successful shows that just fucking blow.
Yes.
That are not interesting or not fun because they don't have any perspective. They're just a fucking panel.
Yes.
It's they're cooked up by a panel of people.
Yeah, and that's the same thing with even like comedians. Like, and if there's any comic listening, you can have your jokes and shit and you could be a jokey motherfucker, but If you don't bring who you are to the table, then you're just going to get lost in the wayside. You got to bring who you are. You got to look in the mirror and go, I am unique. I am different. And you take that uniqueness and you apply it. Don't go in the world and be just a regular fucking comic. Like, be who you are and bring that to your comedy to make you different. And then when we see how different you are as a comic, then that translate to a TV show, because now we can look and say, oh, this is a different kind of world this guy is in. Hey, this could be a show. But as long as you're going out there doing just jokes and shit, can't nobody see no TV show out of that. Can't nobody see no movie out of this. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's important for you to bring whoever you are to the table so it can flourish into other things rather than you just being a snappy fucking comic.
Yeah.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Legend has it, underneath the NJM insurance offices lies a room of rejected mascot memorabilia. Is it real? No one knows. But we do know NJM is proud to put policyholders first. No jingles or mascots, just great insurance. NJM.
Can't you tell my love's a growing?
Did you catch any shit for working on our show?
Yeah.
Out in the world? Yeah. I would imagine,
I caught a lot of shit.
Yeah.
I got a lot, I wouldn't even get booked on certain shows because they deemed me a white comic. I was called token. I was called all kind of shit, man. A lot of people wouldn't even book me or whatever, like on shows and shit like that. I had to like really go my own lane and build my own following and start my own fucking shit. Because
was this after our tour too?
This was during I first came to the Tonight Show.
Yeah, yeah.
Shit stopped. It was like this. First of all, Black people were very proud of me.
Yeah.
When I was on The Tonight Show, they was like, yo, and they made all comedians be like, man, I want to get into late night. It inspired a whole lot of people, definitely. But then when it came to comedy shows, if they felt like I wasn't a great fit for the lineup that was going on, so I would never be booked on a lineup. If it was this comedian, it wouldn't be me. And then if they did book me, a lot of them would be like, oh, it'd be good to get Dion because it'd be a different kind of flavor on the show. Like, that's how they will book me. Yeah, get Dion, because he'll bring a different kind of twist to the show.
Yeah.
And then my audience started changing, too. My audience went from black to, like, white. Like, I was showing up at shows, and my audience was totally...
just white, wow.
Yeah, it'd be just white. But I'll be doing these, like, black jokes, or these jokes that I write for black people, and white people be like, it'll be cool, but it'll be like, odd.
It's
like,
weird, yeah.
Yeah, so.
It's like you said, like, you don't know me enough to laugh at that, whereas a black crowd knows you.
They
know me. Because they have a shared experience.
Yeah, and so I wasn't sitting asses in seats in black theaters and black shows. So a lot of promoters wouldn't book me neither, because a lot of black people weren't watching Conan like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wasn't putting asses in seats. And like a lot of white shows, you'll perform, but you wouldn't make money. Black shows, you make money, but you got to put asses in seats. So it was a long time that I was missing from that scene, but I was becoming funnier and funnier. So when I did start kind of like coming back around the scene or whatever.
And writing,
and that people start going, oh, damn. Like, oh, we didn't know he was that funny. We didn't know this and we didn't know that. And so it just started building up where, like, my black audience started showing up and showing up. But then when I hit Blackish, it was like, yo, like, it was like crazy.
Boom.
Because I still had you all's audience.
Yeah.
And then I had this blackish audience.
Yeah.
And now my crowd was like, that's when my audience started being like the perfect fucking blend, you know? And then a lot of white people watch Blackish.
That's
too,
what I was going to say. Yeah. Blackish is a very mixed show. I mean, it's got it.
Actually, we have more white viewers than black now.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And so.
That's really cool.
Yes,
that's
it is.
Really
it
great.
It really is.
And it's, you know, and it's a testament to the quality of the writing in that show and the quality of the performing in that show.
Absolutely.
Because it does, it's like, you know, it's about a family.
Yeah.
And even though black is in the name, it's secondary to the fact that, like, we know all these people,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Just an audition?
I was leaving here after I had my show, Black Box.
Right, you had a show on TBS, for a little bit.
Yeah, I had a show called Black Box. After Black Box, I was coming back over here just a little bit to do bits, but I didn't want to come back and write like that.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, like, after Black Box, and I had this whole shit with TBS, man. I was, at the time, the people that were in the office at TBS at the time, they were like, on some baseball shit, like White America, like my show just wasn't fitting the network, but it was praised by everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. It was a funny show, man.
And so I just knew that I had a formula and I wanted to go somewhere else and do it or whatever. As I was having meetings to see if I can take Black Box to another network or something, then they came to me and was like, hey, Steve Carell's doing this show on TBS called Angie Tribeca. You should go audition for it. And I was like, okay. And I went and auditioned for it. And the day before I was auditioning, they were like, hey, they want to change your character that you're auditioning for, because Steve Carell don't want you to be another angry, because I was auditioning for a lieutenant. They said, we don't want you being another black screaming lieutenant
in
a fucking show or whatever. So we just gonna have you come in and we gonna see what happens. And I came in and me and Steve Carell actually ad-libbed just anything.
Yeah, yeah.
He would just make up shit and I would just ride with him and just go with him and we'll go back and forth. And he was like, okay, we'll get back at you. They ended up writing a character for me. And so he ended up seeing Full House the night before and saw DJ Tanner's name and came back and was like, you're going to be DJ Tanner. And I was like, oh, okay. And he was like, yeah, we're just going to write a character for you. We'll write it into the script. So a lot of the first episodes, you'll see me just go, hey, Angie, they need you in the office.
Yeah,
and that would be it.
Because they haven't figured it out yet.
So I just come in, hey, you guys, you need some coffee?
Yeah. I'm a placeholder. Yeah.
I'm a placeholder. Something's going to happen with me soon.
TBD.
TBT, just wait. So that's how it was. And so when we found out that he was writing me in, I was like, man, this is great. But the show was taking so long for us to film. Like, we was just like, okay, all right, ready, all right. We went to, like, two upfronts, like, oh, when are we going to be shooting?
Oh, yeah, so they do that shit.
They do that shit. So I was like,
I've been on upfronts with, like, shows where they're like, yeah, we have 10 episodes shot, and it won't be on the air for another 13 months.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So I was like, man. I was just thinking, like, well, let me just keep taking these meetings and stuff. And so this agent by the name of Tamara was like, yo, these people are looking for writers. If you feel like writing and they hear that you just finished writing for Conan, if you can come over and just write for them, like, see if you want to write for them or whatever. And I said, oh, okay, what's the show? And they was like, she was like, I forgot the name of it. I don't know it. And they was like, but can you come meet with the executive producer, the creator of it? And so I met with Kenya Barris, and he was like, yeah, it's a show called Blackish, and it's about this family and da-da-da, woo-woo-woo. And I was like, oh, okay. And they was like, yeah, so we're looking for some characters that you could probably write for or whatever
to
help out. So I was like, all right, fine, cool. So they started telling me about this character named Charlie that Charlie Murphy was supposed to play.
Oh, yeah.
Eddie Murphy's brother who passed away, rest in peace. And so he was supposed to play this character. And at the last minute, he was like, he wasn't going to do it. And so Kenya was like, man, you think you can play the character? And I was like, I guess. But I knew I had my TBS show. I was waiting on that to come. So I was like, yeah.
Black Box still hadn't happened yet.
No, Black Box.
Angie Tribeca.
Angie Tribeca. I was waiting on Angie Tribeca. So I
I remember that, how you kind of were like in between the two.
So I was like, I'll do a guest spot on it, and did it. And they was like, can you do it again? And I said, yeah. And went to another episode, did it again. And they was like, yo, okay, just one more time. And I did another episode, played the character again, and they was like, okay, we got a problem.
Yeah.
It was like, we got to have this character on the show. They went to TBS. TBS was like, fuck no, we're about to start shooting. And they was like, well, can we use him until you shoot? And they was like, okay. So I did probably like 8 episodes of Black-ish, and then I had to stop and do Angie Tribeca.
Yeah.
The next season, they was like, we got to have him. So then they negotiated TBS. TBS was like, fuck that, no, no, no. And then they was like, okay, you can use him on days that we don't need him. So then they started changing their schedule, having me working these days in order to come
over and do Black-ish. That's so fucking stressful.
It was stressful as shit.
Yeah.
But then we got through it, and I ended up doing like 12 episodes of Black-ish. Because they was doing 24 episodes.
Right, so I did
12 of them and still did all the Angie Tribeca. Season 3, they was like, yo, what do you want to do? And I was like, okay, I'd rather do Black-ish. And they was like, didn't want to let me out of my contract. So they took me from a regular to like co-starring on Angie Tribeca so I can do more Black-ish. And I did that. And then the 4th season, they was like, I'll do 2-3 episodes of Angie Tribeca, all of Black-ish, and now it's Grown-ish. So Grown-ish spent off. And so they was like, we need you to jump off Grown-ish. So he was like, we're going to use you as your character to come over on this new show called Grown-ish, which is a spinoff that we can get viewers and shit like that.
Yeah,
we're
going
to use you on both shows. And I said, okay. So I was doing Angie Tribeca, Black-ish, Grown-ish, and still was coming over here doing bits.
Yeah, yeah.
On Conan. And so... And then I
and doing dates too. You and I was fucking lunatic.
And I had this other game show called Face Value on BET that I was hosting. But I filmed that all in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Game shows are nice that way.
Yeah, you can knock them out.
Yeah, yeah.
I filmed it all in 2 weeks. So I was going crazy that 4th season. Like it was just like nuts.
Jesus.
But never auditioned. Everything was just always like,
you know,
we vibe with you, we trust you, yo, we want to rock with you and shit. Same thing with Conan, same thing with Steve Carell, same thing with Kenya.
Yeah.
It was always just, man, we fuck with you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Man, let's make something happen. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything I ever auditioned for, never really got.
Yeah.
It was just always moments like that that made my career take off.
That'll make you feel real good. I hope it does.
It does, man.
Yeah.
It does. It keeps me hopeful. It keeps me feeling like, I believe in myself.
Yeah.
I don't have to question myself.
It's a bullshit business.
Yeah.
But there is some, occasionally realness gets valued and gets rewarded.
It does.
I think, you know, in your case, you're a very good case for that.
Yeah.
Because you just kind of, and it isn't like, I mean, you're not like somebody that's like, you know, I'm coming in here and it's going to be my way. You're just yourself.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, you know, take it or leave it. Yeah. I'll be, you know.
Yeah.
And
try to stay low maintenance.
You know,
I come in, everybody play their position.
Right.
Let's make this happen.
Keep your office neat.
Keep your office neat, motherfucker. I can't wait
till we hit stop on this and I can find out who the fuck that was. I want to get you out of here because we got time constraints here. So the second question is where you're going. And I mean, is there stuff... What do you want to do? Like, what's ahead of you? And it doesn't have to just be work. You know, it could be, I know you got a son. How old's your son now?
17.
17,
now.
Wow.
Yeah. He's doing the shit now. I want to be able to have a bigger fan base, man, where I can do stand-up and I can create content and I can just constantly give the world the way that I think, another perspective, another opinion, another view on the world. and in a funny way that people probably haven't seen before. So yeah. Whatever that is, through movie, television, stand up, that's what I want to do. I just want to keep building my fan base, man, and keep getting people to like see another perspective of something that you haven't seen before,
yeah,
or something that you know about, but just getting another spin on it. And that's what I want to provide to everyone.
Will you always do stand up, you think?
I think I will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I will always do stand up as long as Seinfeld is out there rocking.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know what I mean? And, you know, like
is it your favorite? Is it your favorite thing to do of
it
all
is.
The shit you do?
Yeah, because it's therapeutic. You know,
yeah.
I get to say what's on my mind, you know, and talk about it. I'm not acting. Acting is more of an escape, you know.
Yeah.
So stand up is where I get to talk about what's on my mind and how I'm feeling and what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, be able to express it to some people and have them think differently about something that I think mm-hmm. about, or learn from them and then go talk about it.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, it's very therapeutic for me.
And what do you think? What would that main message be? What do you think? You know, like, you know, there's different ways to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, what's on your tombstone? What advice do you give people?
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, mm-hmm. what's on the poster of the Dion Cole story?
Man, you know? Mine is just, man, do it your way and do it the best way you can do it. You know, always show love in every way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You and you know that is a key too, cuz you do you're a good person.
Man,
you know.
Thank you,
you're
man.
Welcome. You're welcome. And I mean because there are, you know, there's a lot of talented funny people
yeah.
who aren't very nice.
Yeah, they're not.
And yeah, and who tend to elbow their way into things.
Yeah.
And usually it's pushing their way into things where they're might be pushing other people out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And you've always just kind of been organically yourself
yeah.
and you know.
And the same with you, man. Like I used to always tell people this, man. I used to be like, especially like after the tour and stuff, people always be like, how's Conan? And I'd be like, man, Conan's this way, that way, then. How's Andy? I used to be like, yo, Andy is one of the realest motherfuckers you ever want to meet. I used to always tell you,
oh,
I used
thank
to be
you,
like,
thank
man,
you.
Andy is the realest. He gonna give it to you the way it is. It ain't no fluff. It ain't no bullshit. This is what it is. Take it or fucking leave it, man. And that attitude and that way of thinking always fits well with me because
yeah.
you know what you're getting.
I feel
guess.
The same way. That's you and I connected
yeah.
on that way. Yeah.
I don't have to guess. I don't have to worry. I don't have to think, are you thinking this or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
You give me exactly what it is and then I can filter it from there.
Yeah.
And that's how I digest that shit instead of not knowing or you sitting up at saying one thing and thinking another one, I'm gone
yeah,
and all
yeah.
that shit. I get exactly what I get from you and I always commend you for that.
Thank man. You. It's funny because I was in therapy today mm-hmm. and I was talking to my therapist and one of the things I was talking about in relationships, like something, the way people sometimes, especially within romantic relationships,
mm-hmm.
you'll get like somebody will say like, no, go ahead, go to the party.
Yeah.
And you know they mean, don't you fucking dare go to that party.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I've always been like, if you say I can go to the party, I'll go to the party. I just want you to know that. Because if I say it, I mean it.
Yes, sir.
And I expect that back.
Yes.
So don't fucking play games.
Yes.
Because I will take you at your word, even if I know.
Even if I know.
If I know you're fucking, like, giving me a 180 or trying to
yeah.
manipulate me or being, like, a martyr or some
yeah.
shit. It's like, no, life's too fucking short to not say what you mean, you
man.
Know?
Amen.
Yeah.
Brother. Amen, brother. And that's needed in this world, man.
Yeah.
Especially when you're older, too. You ain't got time to be fucking off and bullshitting and wasting time. Like, give it to you the way you can handle it. You can handle the truth, goddammit. And you can handle giving the truth. Don't bullshit me. And that's a great example. If you don't want me going to the party, just say you don't want me going to the goddamn
yeah, yeah.
party. And then we
yeah.
can figure it out from there. It ain't the end of the world.
Yeah.
I might not even feel like going to the goddamn
yeah,
party.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But just telling me that you want me to stay is, yo, that
right.
that saves time.
Right.
and we get down to doing what we really want
to
do.
Yeah. And that isn't to say I'm going to go out, fuck you, I'm going to go to the party. Because I might say, look, I know you don't mean that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. And then next time you can tell me, I really wish you wouldn't go to the party. You know, so.
Real shit, man.
Well, let's go to a party right now.
Yeah.
Because it's time to wrap this thing up. This has been just a joy. I mean, I love seeing you whenever I see you. And it's good to just get here. And like one of the best things about doing this is that I get to like ask people that I love and friends of mine like awkward questions, you know, like tell me about yourself, like which would be fucking weird if we were, you know, having a drink and I'd be like, so what were you like in school? You know, it gives me an excuse to fucking
creepy yeah. as shit and just tell over me. A cocktail. Yeah. Right.
Tell me about your love life. All right, well, Dion, I love you.
Thank you. I love you, Andy.
And good luck. And thank I can't you, wait brother. To see you take over this entire industry.
Likewise, Andy. Love you. Thank you for having me, man.
Thank you. And thank you for listening to The Three Questions. And we will be at you next time.
Got a big, big love for you.
The Three Questions with Andy Richter is a Team Coco and Earwolf production. It's produced by me, Kevin Bartelt, executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Chris Bannon and Colin Anderson at Earwolf. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, associate produced by Jen Samples and Galit Sahayak, and engineered by Will Beckton. And if you haven't already, make sure to rate and review The Three Questions with Andy Richter on Apple Podcasts.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at tmobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at tmobile.com.